Hello, and welcome to the podcast, Live the Hustle. I'm your host, Bobby Wiley, and I want to know, are you truly happy? Do you aspire to be a better person? Do you want to change your life? What about the lives of others around you? Are you ready to create the change that you want? I created this podcast to help motivate and inspire you to make that lasting change in your life. Because nobody's going to do it for you. It is my hope to help you to get up, get dressed, and get hustling. Today's guest is Mr. Sativa. Mr. Sativa is a 29-year-old who began using cannabis on and off since he turned 19 years old. His journey into cannabis initially began in college when he first consumed cannabis for recreational purposes within his social circles. When he graduated college for professional and reputational purposes due to cannabis's lingering stigma, he decided to cease usage to make a living for himself and find gainful employment. In the years since finishing his undergraduate studies, he has since contracted debilitating insomnia, with which he has worked with his doctors for several years to treat, and was placed on numerous different sleep aids, such as Seroquel, Ambien, Lunesta, Benadryl, Trazodone, Clonopin, over-the-counter sleep aids, alcohol, valerian root, sleepy time tea, and ZMA, all of which failed to provide any tangible and consistent relief. In 2016, after having gone through this illness for several years and exhausting all conventional and socially acceptable options, he decided to give cannabis a try again to alleviate his suffering. He was finally able to get a decent night's sleep again and has since become a medical marijuana advocate and proponent ever since. It also inspired change. He has decided to create his own podcast entitled I Am Cannabis Sativa and can be found on anchor.fm. All right, so I know a little bit of your backstory, but why don't you go ahead and fill us in with how you got to be where you are today?
Sure. I started using cannabis during my college days. So at about like 19 was sort of my first usage of it. And I found that I enjoyed doing it and stuff. But then, when I finished college and I had to start looking for full-time employment, it was always beaten into my brain that you stop after you're done college. And, you know, and my first job out of college was for a medical device company. So, in other words, they're regulated by the FDA. So I had to pass a drug test, which I didn't have any problem passing because after college I immediately stopped. But in the first few months and the first few years out of college, I started noticing I had sleep issues. So it was almost immediately after finishing college. And at first I was just like, all right, well, you know, maybe it's just a little bit of anxiety now that I'm adjusting to the real world and stuff. You know, I thought my insomnia was a very temporary thing. So I just went to the doctor. They gave me sort of Ambien and, you know, that stuff didn't really work too well. But, you know, my first year of the illness, I was just using over-the-counter sleep aids. And, you know, that was having a varying level of success, but it was very, very sort of inconsistent. And I did that for a few years, and it got to the point where I was like, all right, these over-the-counter sleep aids weren't working. Like, it was like roulette, pretty much. Sometimes I was going to Target, I was trying their over-the-counter sleep aids. I was going to Walmart. After those didn't work, I would go to the next store, and then I go to Walgreens, and you know, try those ones. And then after a while, I just decided that those weren't working. And then I went to Vitamin Shop and tried some over-the-counter vitamins. And those helped to a degree. But wasn't really anything consistent. And so after I sort of got sick of that, I went the pharmaceutical route. And the initial, I mean, like the first few years, I'd been prescribed sort of Ambien and, trazodone, other sort of sleep aids. But this time, I want to say my psychiatrist was prescribing some other medicine. I think it was called Seroquel. And I don't recall that ever sort of doing anything for me. Like, it just, like, I just took it, and it was like roulette, like all the other over-the-counter sleep aids I was using. It was just.
Insomnia, I've had the only experience I've had with difficulty sleeping is through pain. And insomnia, correct me, I mean, it's not pain related, right? It's just an inability to fall asleep.
Yeah, I mean, it's an inability to fall and to stay asleep, and it can be due to like anxiety, it can be due to depression, it can be due to a bunch of other factors. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it was. I was just like I'd just be laying on my bed and like staring at the ceiling for 7, 8 hours, and
Yeah.
it was very, very, it was very rough. And
And I'm sure that has a lot of negative side effects to the rest of life, right? Because I mean, sleep's like a very important phase that we all have to have.
yeah, it had very sort of negative sort of consequences. Like I just like I'd have conversations with like good friends, and like over the past few years of having it was just like I wasn't able to converse in the same way anymore, because I wasn't sleeping, I wasn't really thinking clearly. I couldn't crack jokes in the same way. It's just It just had it just wreaked havoc on my quality of life. And it got to the point I was self-medicating with alcohol a little bit. It got really, really bad. I was using like another substance called kratom or whatever. I don't know if you've heard of that, but using that to sort of help out. After a couple of years of this roulette, I got sick of just trying these same medications and them not having effect. After 4 years of this illness, I decided to use marijuana. So I was using a street dealer that one of my room those a friend those friends with one of my roommates. So I was going through him and getting it, and that was helping a lot more. But the nature of street dealers, and the problem with them, is that you don't know what you're getting. Like, I didn't know what I was getting with this person. Like I would ask him, oh, like, what strain is this? And he's like, I think it's Kush. I and
Yeah, who knows what it is. And did you find out about marijuana's propensity to help with sleep from your previous experience in college, or did you find out some new information about it, some new studies? How did you just decide to go with marijuana?
Well, I mean, I would say it was a combination of factors. It was like it was me after a while, like seeing that the pharmaceuticals just weren't cutting it. And it was also me thinking back to college and being like, all right, I know when I was up until even my last year of college, I wasn't having any issues with sleep. So it was like, when I was in college trying weed, I never had sleep issues. So that was another sort of factor that drove up to it. In one of my other in my sort of job or whatever, in one of the positions I had at the time, one of my favorite coworkers, like she was probably one of the smartest people in the company, in my opinion. And she took me under her wing, and she sort of told me how things worked at the com at my job, and was very, very helpful at giving me advice and helping me out. And she was and I and this was when the medical dispensaries first opened in Mass. And she was talking about how, she herself is going to go to the first dispensary, and she was talking about how I should sort of look into it as well too. And she planted that seed, but I was still sort of I was still sort of, I don't know, I mean, it might affect my career. And I was still sort of hesitant at that point. But when she told me, it had been a year later until I started trying it, but she planted that seed, and once that seed had been planted, when I was at my wit's end with pharmaceuticals, that's when I decided to sign up for medical.
Yeah, and how was it for you finding a doctor who was willing to help you along with the process?
Well, I mean, funny enough, I actually use Reddit. There's a subreddit for medical marijuana patients in Massachusetts, and I through that I figured out how to go through the process. So it made it very easy. Like, it was like, oh, you know, you have to go to a cannabis doctor to get your recommendation. You know, you pay the $200 to the doctor, and in my state, it's $200 to the doctor most of the time, and then $50 to the state, so $250 total. And I just followed that, and I was in the clear. But
sounds like it's a lot easier than here in Illinois.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to sort of do. But it's just the money part. Like, I mean, I know 250 sounds like chump change to you compared to like Illinois, but even the 200 or whatever, like, I mean, I don't know if I'm gonna renew this year. It's sort of a big cost for me, so I might just, I mean, luckily we have rec over here in Massachusetts, so I'll just stand in the long lines and do rec.
That's a good point. What's the difference between having the medical license to just being recreational? Is there different tax rate? Is it a small, you know, you get the jump in front of everyone in line card like at Disney World, or what's the main difference?
Okay, so there's a couple of differences. So medical has, there's zero tax. So you just pay face value for the medicine. And the edibles, you get access to higher dose edibles. So here, 100 recreational users could only get 100 milligram edible per package or whatever. But if you're a medical patient, then you can get higher dose edibles, so over 100 if you so desire. And another perk of doing medical here is a lot of the dispensaries will have these sort of first-time deals. So, like, one dispensary that I went to, like, you pay the whatever to get your card or whatever, and then you get $200 free to spend at their dispensary. So I would say most of these dispensaries have those sort of deals. You know, it may not necessarily be 200, but it might be like 100 or whatever. You spend 50 of your own money, and then they cover 50.
Oh, like a voucher.
Yeah. So you can, like if you're very careful about it, you can go a while without spending too much of your own money.
Yeah.
But it's just getting that over that initial hill of spending the $250 that prices out a lot of people.
Yeah, and I guess that's set by each state, right?
Yeah, that's set by each state, pretty much. I think in California, like my sister was a medical patient in California. When I was telling her that it's 200 here, she was like, "Wow, that's a lot." Because I think in California, I think it's like 50 or 75 for the whole process.
Yeah, because I heard Colorado does a lesser tax rate for medical than for recreational, but that's the only thing that I've really ever heard out of all the other regulation that's out there, with all the states going recreational more recently. So I was curious about that. What's your preferred method?
I would say smoking it and edibles, but I can't really afford edibles. Like I would say my typical edible dose is about, I think, 20 to 30 milligrams, but a 20 to 30 milligram edible in a lot of the dispensaries would be like $30. So it's too unworkable for me to do edibles very often. So I would say it's mostly just smoking. I'll do vape pens on occasion, but I run into the same issue. The vape pens would be too expensive for me to do on a long-term basis, so I don't really do that a lot. But yeah, I would say mostly edibles and smoking.
What do you think is the biggest thing holding back negative stigma?
I would say it's just a matter of like people like you and me saying our stories. Like from Gallup polls and from polling I've read, it's like I heard that it's like over 66% of Americans want marijuana to be legal for adults over 21. And I just feel that a lot of what happens is that people like us don't really tell our stories, you know, like, or we do, but you still have like a lot of, you still have a lot of people that are skittish about talking about, like, even if they don't use marijuana themselves, like, you still have a lot of people that are skittish about advocating for it. And for, you know, if all 66% of people that believe it should be legal for all adults, if all 66% of them, you know, were to write to their Congress people, it'd be legal overnight. But I just feel a lot of people, you know, for career reasons, for career reasons, you know, for fear that they might have DSS or CPS called, or just people just wanting to protect their reputations, and just people wanting to not really make it known that they're too for it. You know, I would say that's the biggest reason. Yeah. That's the biggest thing.
I agree. I think a lot of it's generational issues too. Like, I haven't seen any statistics, and I was wondering if you knew if they have that 66% broken down by like age group.
I don't remember to my knowledge if it broke it down specifically. But I have seen, if I were to Google it, I would be able to find it. But I have seen charts like outlining how each generation sees it. But it just, I don't know. Just like I've read like reports saying that like in Florida, the state that you just left or whatever, like senior citizens are flocking to medical marijuana in droves. Like I've actually read that. So it's. Huh. So I do feel that there's, like, even here in Massachusetts where we legalize it for recreational purposes, like, on a local level, and this is going on in Cali too, like, you're having city councils and town councils banning it in their localities. So you have swaths of the state that have banned it or that have held off on recreational sales. I do feel that a lot of the people that are in these city councils, like you mentioned, are probably older people that are more likely to be against it. But I feel like most of the battles being fought in recreational states are local politics. It's on the local level that the battle still needs to be fought, you know?
Yeah. And I wonder, I mean, just in recent history, we've seen an upsurge in the popularity of it, but we always see these old black and white television commercials of reefers and, you know, in like the 50s and 60s. So I think that's where a lot of the negative connotations come from. And those are the age groups that are holding on because they've been, you know, in effect, like brainwashed most of their lives that it's a bad thing. And it leads to jail and it leads to crime. And all this isn't true.
I agree. Like, I don't remember who said this, but they were saying weed itself isn't dangerous, but it's getting caught with it that is.
Yeah.
Would you like to support this podcast and help motivate and inspire people in your own small way? By supporting me in this podcast through Patreon, you can help make this a possibility. With your support, I will be better able to continue to make content for the masses that so desperately need it. Go to patreon.com That's patreon.com, and search for me, Bobby Wiley. You'll see my beautiful face looking back at you. Thank you for your support.
Now, as far as like taking charge and creating this initiative and this podcast to go over all this information, because I've looked at a lot of your podcast history and you've got, you know, 20 something plus episodes out there, it looks like, and that's a lot of content to be putting out.
Yeah. When I first started doing it, like it was sort of a learning curve. So I would say maybe my first 10 or so episodes, like, you know, it would be coming up with the script, you know, of what I was going to say, you know, was coming up with topics. But I mean, after a while, you just sort of get the technique down, I guess. And, now it's like, I try to release like the main episode every Saturday, but then like if I have time or whatever, because I work nights, but if I have time during the day and I see an interesting news story, then I'll do an additional episode reporting on it. But that's kind of just sort of how I do things. I eventually want to do like the reason, I guess the core to why I sort of tried to do this podcast was getting back to like my earlier thought was that it just like, even though you have 67% of Americans that support it, you still have so many people that are afraid of sort of speaking up and showing their support for it. But I just kind of wanted to sort of radicalize, particularly, I want to say, the over 40 crowd, because I know people in my generation, and I'm 29, I know people in my generation are already on board with it, yeah. But it's that swing cannabis user that I'm trying to get. It's that middle-aged person with children, or that is maybe 10, 20 years removed from using it, that might benefit, but because of stigmas, because they don't know a whole lot about marijuana, or because they've bought into these sort of propaganda, they're still on the fence. So I'm trying to sort of show this sort of congeant of people that, you know, it's okay and that they can sort of benefit from it. And I just sort of want to accelerate progress on this issue, and I just don't feel it's happening quickly enough. So that's why I went and took initiative to sort of start what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, I'm in that 40 plus age group, and yeah, a lot of what I was told growing up was that, you know, it's bad. It's bad for you. It's illegal. It can land you in jail, and it's a gateway drug. And if you do that, you're going to be more inclined to do other bad things. And so it was always negatively pushed upon my generation. And I think a lot of us in my generation kind of rebelled against their parents anyway, and did it to one extent or another. But I still think there's a hefty percentage of the population of my generation that aren't necessarily on board. I happen to be one that is. But yeah, generationally, there's a big difference and the amount of negative propaganda applied to it growing up. Because I remember watching He-Man cartoons, and in the middle of it, like a D.A.R.E. commercial would come on, and they were talking about that as well. And I just don't see that on TV anymore.
Yeah, even when I was sort of like growing up, like they would have these like commercials. There's one that I remember where it was like a talking dog or whatever. It's like talking to like, I think like a teenager, saying, "This used to be so much more active, and used to be so much more whatever when you weren't doing weed. But now you're doing weed, and you just sit on your couch," and it showed her melting onto the couch. Like, yeah, just, I mean, I was fed the propaganda as well too. Yeah. But yeah, it's just so much to overcome for a lot of people.
Yeah, how much research do you do for each of your episodes?
Really depends. Like some episodes take longer to create than others. Like if I'm just reading off like news or commentary, then that's an episode that doesn't really require a lot of too much effort and too much research.
Yeah.
But if I'm having to research conditions and whatnot, I'm going to YouTube, I'm listening to other YouTubers and health professionals that know a lot more than I do, and then I'm taking sort of notes on either my laptop or my notebook, and then I'm processing those notes, and then I'm looking up strains, and then looking up expertise that I'll put in every episode. Like if I talk about migraines or whatever, I'll look for like a doctor that has talked about medical cannabis for treating migraines. I'll put their clip in the episode, because I always say in every episode, don't just listen to me, listen to actual professionals. I'm not a doctor nor lawyer, so that's kind of how I do the episode. So it'll really depend on which on what it is. If it's just a new if it's just me ranting about news, then that's obviously a bit less effort. But if it's researching actual medical conditions, then it takes a bit longer to do.
Well, how can people get a hold of you? How do they follow you on social media?
Sure. I have a couple of social media. So on Twitter, I can be found at IC Sativa Podcast. So that's my at handle. And then on Instagram, I can be found at I Am Cannabis Sativa. So exactly how it sounds.
With both S's, cannabis sativa.
Yeah, with both S's. And funny you bring that up. So when I first started the podcast, both S's weren't available. So every time I'd have to read out the intro of my podcast, I'd have to be like, only one S. But in like the past month or so, I tried changing my username to the both S's, and then it went through. So
Oh, there you go.
yeah. Yep. And I have a Pinterest, which I just started, and let me it's I Am Cannabis Sativa, both S's.
Okay. Awesome. And then your podcast?
So my podcast is I Am Cannabis Sativa, and that can be found on Anchor, that can be found on Google Play Music Store, that can be found on iTunes, and only like the first five or six episodes in SoundCloud, but SoundCloud is like they charge you, I think, $20 a month for pro, so I kind of
Ooh,
ditched that.
yeah.
And Spotify, funny with Spotify, only the first episode's there, but I forgot how I submitted it. So like I halfway through it, I ended up I went from using SoundCloud to do the hosting to Anchor. So because of that, like I have to contact Spotify and clear that up. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time. It was a great interview, and I appreciate it very much.
And I appreciate you taking the time to speak to me. I really appreciate it. And it was a pleasure, and I had fun doing this.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. I hope that you enjoyed it and are a little bit more motivated and inspired to rise above the adversity in your life to create the change that you want. The music that you've heard on the podcast is from none other than Punch Deck. Two words. He's able to be found on SoundCloud.com. If you would like to follow me on social media, I can be found on both Twitter and Instagram under the name Bobby_Wiley77. If you have a motivational and inspirational story that you would like to share with the world, let me know. Perhaps you could be my next guest. Thanks again. and I hope to catch you for the next installment of Live the Hustle.